Okay, Rabbi Galler, first of all, thank you beyond words for that overly generous, kind introduction. I really, really appreciate it, and the admiration is mutual, and I'm glad we have this opportunity. I want to apologize in advance and explain to people who are looking and very confused. There's a whole chevra on my left I ordinarily learn with on Tuesday nights who think that rather than our normal learning, I paid someone to introduce it with nice accolades for me. So I want to thank the chevra who normally we learn on Tuesday nights. And it's a privilege tonight to join the Young Israel of West Hempstead community, to join Rabbi Galler, who's a great leader, and of course the legendary Rabbi Kelmer, an outstanding Talmud Chacham. What a covet it is to be able to have spoken to him earlier today and to have the opportunity to speak to his community. Faces I recognize, new friends, please God, that we'll make tonight. And so I thank everyone in advance. We're trying to coordinate on several platforms, several laptops. Got my assistant director sitting next to me, one of my children, and I appreciate everybody's patience. I hope you can hear. And the topic that we have for tonight, as we really launch tonight, is the opening of the 9 days. It's a time that we dread. Hopefully we dread for the right reasons. We dread not because we're carnivores and we can't imagine not being able to consume the meat that we crave, although for me personally, that's one of the great expressions of grief and loss during this time. But we, of course, don't want to welcome the 9 days because of what it represents, that we're in a continued state of exile, of galus, that we've not yet turned things around, that we continue the very causes and the very reasons that precipitated Hashem withdrawing His countenance, His intense presence among us, and yet here we are. And the reality of the world, the condition of the Jews in the world, as good as it is, and as much as we've made progress, and as well as we're able to live in so many respects and in so many ways, even this pandemic and even other justice movements that have arisen lately have exposed elements, and we see a spike of anti-Semitism, of our enemies and of our adversaries. We see the Jewish struggles to belong, and we see forget the enemies from the outside, our worst enemies. And ultimately what our chazal, what our rabbis blame of why we do not yet have geula, why we're doing this over technology and not sitting around in Yerushalayim eating karbonos, is because of the way we treat one another. Before we can point a finger, before we can blame, before we can bemoan, and before we can repair the way the outside world perceives and treats the Jew, it begins with how we treat one another. The respect that we have or the lack of it for one another. And that's our topic of tonight. How we can love even those that we don't like, which I think is the key and the secret to the redemption. So Tuesday nights, we are in the middle of a series about how to live our best version of ourselves. We've been talking about mindfulness and presence, and for those who are disappointed, know that what we'll talk about tonight is an even greater and stronger foundation. You can't talk about living your best self if you don't know how to live with others. If you don't know how to make room and make space, if you don't know how to live with peace and with harmony, if we don't know how to yearn and strive for the redemption, for the geula, there's no way we can live and express our best selves in this world. I don't need to take our precious time to describe and develop for you what a divided and divisive world we live in, what a polarized world we live in. And I don't even, it's such a polarized world, I hesitate to even give you examples of the areas in which we disagree. And how we, masks, no masks, distancing, rallies, pandemic, politics, politicized data, even just saying these words elicits emotional reaction from so many. We are so invested, and we're invested in a way that we dig in our heels, that we are emotionally charged, that we feel a sense of animosity, even or enmity towards those who don't agree with us. I've witnessed and observed, I'm sure you have as well, a certain phenomenon when it's come to the pandemic. And I know I'm speaking to audiences from all over, and I am in an undisclosed location quarantining with my family, please God, for 14 days as the governor has demanded before my daughter's wedding. And people are reacting to the pandemic differently, and there's a fascinating phenomenon. The way that we perceive and relate to others in their observance of guidelines with the pandemic is very similar to our reaction to other people's religious standards. We don't want people to be any more than us. They're fanatic, they're crazy, they're unbalanced, they're extreme. But God forbid, we don't want people to be any less than us. They're irresponsible, and they're risky takers, and they're going to damage, they're going to hurt us all. There's an old line which I forgot about the people who drive faster than you and the people who drive slower than you. Everyone's got to drive the same speed as you. And so even in how, instead of rallying around with a sense of unity in order to create a safe community and a safe space for all of us, even how we get through such a dangerous and threatening time has created divide, has created judgment, has created animosity, has made it harder to like and to love certain people. The people that we watch and we witness who we feel... The people we watch and witness and we feel are not being as scrupulous and as diligent and as careful as we are. And the key to achieving harmony in our families, and the key to achieving happiness, to achieving a sense of unity and community and people that's going to bring Geula redemption, is for us to learn to love everyone. Now here's the hard part. To love the people who are just like you, who vote like you, and who observe like you, who think like you and who root for the same sports teams we were talking about as you. To love the people who wear the same yarmulke as you and observe the same standards as you and similar and similar. That's easy to love such people. It's easy to love the carbon copies of yourself. The question, the challenge, what we're spending the next 9 days intensely asking ourselves and reflecting on ourselves is, how good are we at loving those that we don't like? Now you'll say that's an oxymoron, that's absurd. What does it mean to love someone you don't like? Like is the stepping stone to love. Love is predicated on liking. So if you don't like someone, how can you expect it to love? How can you love someone that you don't like? That you don't like, that you don't want to be around, that you don't respect, that you don't agree with, that you think is dangerous or divisive? That's what we're going to talk about. And that's the key to it all. And if the next 9 days we learn it, then maybe we won't have to sit on the ground this year. And maybe we won't have to recite kinos and listen to Eicha this year. And maybe we won't have to be apart from the Ribono Shel Olam this year. Maybe He will welcome all of us as children back into His home to be together, one family in harmony, because that's what's going to be the root of it all. That is the very definition of family. What family is not made up of people that you have to love even if you don't like? You do know what the definition of a dysfunctional family is, right? A dysfunctional family is any family with more than one person in it. It's a dysfunctional family. Every family has character and characters. Every family has biological members of the family and in-law members of the family and cousins and distant cousins. And we don't all see eye to eye. And we don't all speak the same way and act the same way, behave the same way, observe the same way, prioritize the same way. And there are people that we really struggle. They are what we would call unlikable. And yet when they're family, it's a non-negotiable. When they're family, you have to love even those whom you don't like. But we'll have to define what that means to love. The Gemara in Yoma Daf Testament Aleph is what tells us that the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of Sinas Chinam. And Chazal deduce that if the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of a violation of the three cardinal sins, the three most important foundational, definitional, moral pillars of not worshipping idol and not practicing promiscuity and pursuing lewdness and licentiousness, and of not murder, murder in the sense of taking a life and murder in the sense of embarrassing and shaming another. And if the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of those three reasons, and the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Sinas Chinam, then what do you know is that Sinas Chinam, that baseless hatred, that judging and negating and marginalizing and isolating and dismissing and undermining, and mocking, and ridiculing, and scorning another, sinas chinam is as bad as the three cardinal sins, from the fact that the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of it. Now what's fascinating is the second Beis HaMikdash, we didn't have a problem. Our Shemona Esrei went on, we shuckled. The kashrus standards were the highest level. Shabbos, we were scrupulous in detail. The minutia, we were diligent about. And yet, second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of Sinas Chinam. You see that a person can be otherwise measured as a righteous religious personality, but if they harbor ill will, if they sin in judgment, if they gossip and slander, if you disrespect and marginalize and don't make room for people who disagree in any which way, then you're not in fact a righteous religious personality. That in fact is as equal as these three cardinal sins. So my question for you is simple. What is baseless hatred? The Talmud's terminology is sinas chinam. It could have just said sinna. It could have said, what were we guilty of? Sinna. Hatred, enmity, animosity. Hatred. Hatred. Hatred is different than dislike. hatred. But is all hatred baseless? Isn't hatred at times warranted? Isn't it justified? Doesn't it, in fact, at times have a very strong basis? You can dislike someone who believes or observes or votes or lives differently. I have a basis for disliking you. I don't like that you talk during davening. I don't like that you don't talk during davening. I don't like you wear a mask. I don't like that you don't wear a mask. I don't like that you vote this way. I don't like that you vote that way. I don't like that you're careful about this. I don't like how you dress on Shabbos. I don't like the thing you wear on your head on Shabbos. It's not baseless. There's a good reason. We don't normally look at someone and say, ha, let me randomly dislike them. I have no good reason. I don't even know them. Hatred most often, in fact, has a basis. So why did our rabbis specifically, never randomly, why did they label it sinas chinam? Specifically, they called it baseless. I had a dear friend whose first yahrzeit is coming up on Erev Tisha B'Av. Some of you may have known him. His name was Rabbi Dr. Brian Galbit. Baruch Tzvi ben Reuven Nasan. He was one of the most outstanding, extraordinary people I'd ever met in my life. And I say that not just because he was my dear friend, but anyone who knew him, their life was transformed by knowing him. He was a bright light, optimistic and positive. Everything was always the best. His emuna in Hashem, despite confronting a glioblastoma that took his life after treatments that denied him of his dignity, he nevertheless, even in his last breaths, even in his final words, said, Hashem is the best, isn't he? Isn't Hashem amazing? That's who he was and how he lived his life. And it's not our topic for tonight. But I want to tell you that Brian Galbit, he was an amazing connector, not a divider. He didn't put a wedge between himself and others. He didn't focus on what the differences were. My kids go to this school. Well, I can't be friends with you because your kids go to that school. I wear this kind of yarmulke. You wear that kind of yarmulke. I have this background. You have that background. I prioritize this or observe in this way. And you observe either more strictly or more leniently than I. There are people who look for the division. They are dividers. They push people away. And there are people who are connectors. They look for the commonality. And they see in what way they can connect. In what way they can connect. Brian had so many components to who he was, but he found something to connect with everyone. Torah, following sports. He was a doctor, the practice of medicine. He was a leader of community, community care. He was optimistic. His smile and his laughter were contagious. And he was lovable. And everybody who met him, Jew and non-Jew alike, colleagues, nurses in the hospital, every segment of the diverse nature of our community and others, they all fell in love. And I once asked him, which is why I'm sharing this with you, aside from honoring his memory as we get close to his first yahrzeit, I once asked him, I said, Brian, how do you do it? You never get down? This was before he was diagnosed and before he suffered terribly. Do you never get down? How is it? You're always positive. You're always upbeat. Sometimes I would avoid seeing him because I didn't want that energy. I wanted to feel down and negative. How is it you're able to do that? And how do you love everybody? And how do you have that rapport and that connection with everyone? And he said to me, do you think it comes naturally? I've been working on this since I'm a young man. And he said that living with faith and positivity and optimism, seeing the good in others, having an ayin tova, not an ayin ra, being happy and hopeful, being able to forgin others, being happy for other people's success, looking at the whole person, danas kola adam lekavschus. Don't you judge them based on that one. They never texted you back. They gave me the terrible seat at the wedding. We hosted them 17 times. They only hosted us and reciprocated 16 times. Don't judge a person by that one moment, by their shortcoming, by their deficiency, by their bad day, by their stupid comment, by their failure to get back to you. Danas kola adam, the whole person. Look at the whole package. Look at the whole experience. Look at the totality of the relationship. He said to me emphatically, and he lived this every day, and so can we. He said, loving everyone is a choice, not an emotion. Love is not an emotion. It is a choice. It is a description of behavior. Love is not an adjective. It is a verb. Like or dislike, that's an adjective. I'm not going to lie to you. I try to be like Brian, Zichrono Levracha. I try to not only love, but like everybody. But there are really unlikable people. There are people it's really hard to like. And the Torah never tells you you have to like everybody. It never commands us, it never obligates us, it never holds us to that standard, it asks us to be accountable, to like everybody. There are unlikable people. But it does tell us you have to love everyone. Because love is not an adjective, love is a verb, love is how we behave and how we treat, love is the loyalty that we show, love is the smile we put on our face, love is the favorable view that we take, the benefit of the doubt that we give. Love is not a verb. Love is not an adjective, love is a verb. And the members of my nuclear family, my biological family, my extended family, even the ones that I struggle to like, even those I dislike, I have to love. You mess with my family, the most unlikable member of my family, you got to come through me. The loyalty I will show, what I will do for them to stand up, to protect them. You don't speak negatively about a member of my family, even the one I dislike. I don't dislike any of them. Even if I did dislike, even the dislike the most. Because we have to love. And what we're being commanded and what we're told is that we see the entire Jewish people as an extension of our family. The entire Jewish people are our family. It's not they're like our family. It's not as if. It's not a metaphor or simile. We're not simply making a comparison. We are one family. And boy, does the world sometimes remind us of that. When they isolate us and when they treat us to a different standard. And you think our enemies care what yarmulke is on your head? You think our enemies care about where you send your kids to school? You think our enemies care about what shul you daven at or don't daven at, how long your shmona esrei is, or which hachshirim and standards you keep and don't keep? Our enemies don't care. They lump us all together. They see us as one nation, one people, one family, and that's how we are to see ourselves as well. The Torah tells us we have an obligation not to like one another, but we do have an obligation and mandate, and it's for failing so badly in this mitzvah that we are in this state of mourning, that we are desperate for a haircut or to shave or to listen to music, that we're going to begin to feel desperate to do laundry or eat meat. And that on Tisha B'Av, we wish we were not sitting on the floor because we have not learned to love one another even when we don't like one another. Torah tells us, V'yahavta l'reyecha kamocha. You have to love your neighbor, l'reyecha kamocha. Nechama Leibovitz, Zichrona Levracha, said kamocha, that word, love your neighbor as yourself. Kamocha means mi kamocha kiparo. In the conversation, in Sefer Bereishis, kiparo means like you, there's a piece of you. How can you love your neighbor like yourself even when you dislike them? Because you can find in every person something that you have in common. There is something redeemable in everyone you will meet, even the most unlikable person in your life. The question is what you focus on. Do you focus on the differences? Do you focus on what you don't like? Do you focus on what you reject? Do you focus on what you judge? Or do you focus on finding some commonality? It could be as silly, trivial, or trite as rooting for the same sports team. It could be that you live in the same country and you feel a patriotism for the same people or nation. It could be something very shallow. It could be something very deep. It could be very simplistic. It could be something profound. But if you take long enough and if you look hard enough, you will find something redeemable in everyone. That doesn't mean you'll come to learn to like them, because so much is still irredeemable. But you can learn to love even those that we struggle to like. And how can we be so confident that you can find something? How do we know there's something redeemable in everyone? Because everyone has a Tzelem Elokim. The Ribono Shel Olam expressed himself uniquely and distinctly, exclusively and singly through each and every one of us. So every human being you encounter, every fellow Jew, every brother or sister from our family has the same DNA of the Ribono Shel Olam in them. And to reject the possibility that there's a way that you can connect, to dismiss any commonality at all, is in fact to reject the Ribono Shel Olam, is to suggest that the person doesn't even have a Tzelem Elokim. Now some people, that Tzelem Elokim, that godliness, is so covered and is so deep and is so buried under layers and layers of behavior that is so unlikable that it's hard to find. But that's why this. No one ever said this is an easy mitzvah. V'yahavta l'reyecha kamocha. We have to dig deep, l'reyecha kamocha. Notice the end of that pasuk in Parashas Kedoshim, Ani Hashem. How do I know and why should you love your neighbor as yourself? Because I'm God. And I created every human being and there's a unique expression of me through them, says God. And therefore there's something. And if you haven't found it, you haven't looked hard enough for it. And there are people like Brian Gabbard, Alav HaShalom, and there are people like others, and there are people who are listening and watching and with us right now who are role models to every one of us, who you could put them in a room with just about anyone, and they can make conversation. And they could find something in common. And they could enjoy the company. Who see the Tzelem Elokim in every single one of us. So the Alter Rebbe, Rav Shneur Zalman of Liadi, the Alter Rebbe of Chabad and Tanya, in Perek Lamed Beis, Lev, he writes the following quote: it's a mitzvah to hate people, and it's also a mitzvah to love them. He's trying to reconcile two psukim. On the one hand, v'yahavta l'reicha kamocha, but on the other, ohavei Hashem sinura. If you love Hashem, you have to hate bad. So I don't understand, if I see a person behaving differently than me, if I see a person neglecting or rejecting what I hold so dear, the sacred and timeless Torah, oh, Hashem, sinu ra, don't I have a mitzvah to hate them? Says the Alter Rebbe, you know how you reconcile the seeming conflict, the seeming contradiction between these two values? It's very simple. It's a mitzvah to hate them, and it's also a mitzvah to love them. Both are true. You hate the Yetzirah, the evil inclination in them, and you love the goodness that is concealed in them, which is a spark of godliness. You love the soul, the core. You love who they are at their best, and what you hate and what you reject are the behaviors that you dislike. We have that ability. Any hatred directed towards a person is considered baseless. It is called sinas chinam on its face. Why is it chinam? Because if you hate the person, not their behavior, it means you are rejecting the Ribono Shel Olam in them. You failed to go through the exercise. You failed to put in the effort to find a commonality, a connection. That doesn't mean we don't confront or debate or challenge ideas or actions or people that we can't tolerate. There are evil and wicked ideas and agendas. There are people who are pursuing them. There are people who are advocating for them. And we must not flinch in confronting them and in fighting them. But we're fighting their agenda. We're fighting their priorities. We're fighting the results they seek. Not the very people at their core. People at their core are expressions, unique expressions of God. And therefore we have an obligation. We have an obligation to love them. And so even the people that we don't like, we have to love. Like is an emotion. I like people I admire. I like people I have similarities to. I like people I relate to or connect with. But love's not an emotion. Love is a decision that we make. It is a verb. It describes how I feel, not about you. It describes how I treat you. Love is not measured by your heart. Love is measured by your deeds. To love someone is to be loyal and devoted, courteous, kind, thoughtful, giving, caring. That Hebrew word for love, as we know, Rav Dessler's famous Kuntras HaChesed, the root of the word ahava, love, is have, to give. It's the gematria of echad. It creates a sense of unity and oneness. It bonds us and binds us together. The answer of how we can get up off the floor, the answer to end this gullus and exile, is for us to begin to love even those, or especially love those who we struggle to like. Love is the result, not of receiving from one another. Love is not what you do for me, how you can advance my agenda, my needs, my happiness, my joy. Love, says Rav Dessler, is the result of giving, have, of investing in one another, of building bridges that connect us to another. Almost everyone has at least one member of people in our inner circle, of people who are around us, who we don't like. It's hard to approve of their lifestyle or their choices. We can't stand their ego or their personality. And yet, despite not liking them, we know as members of our family, we have to love them. It's what it means to be a family. A family practices loyalty. And can it be expect commitment and kindness even among those members who don't like one another? And that's what we, the Jewish people, all 13 million of us across the planet, we are one family. And while we don't approve of or admire or enjoy or like every member of our Jewish family, like many don't like every member of their biological or nuclear family, we still have to function as one great big family. And that's when the Ribono Shel Olam withdrew. You want to know the mess that got us into this place to begin with? It's because what parent wants to spend time with their children when they bicker and when they fight and when they call each other names and when they judge and when they try to minimize the other, marginalize the other? So the parent says, I'll tell you what, kids, I'm out of here. I'm done. You figure this out. You go fight it out. I don't want to be back. I don't want you to be here in my home, and I don't want to visit with you and yours until you can learn to live with harmony and peace, until you can learn to get along. You don't even have to like one another, but as members of a family, you have to love one another. I can't tell you how to feel, but I can demand of you how to behave. How to behave. And that's what Avas Yisrael is all about. The great Rav Kook famously said that if sinas chinam, baseless hatred. And so now we've defined that all hatred of a fellow Jew is baseless. What you should hate is their action and behavior. Never hate the core of the person. And if you hate the core of the person, then that by definition is baseless, because it means you're rejecting the spark of godliness. You're rejecting the divine spark that is inside them. So Rav Kook wrote that the antidote, the answer, the only answer to baseless hatred is to practice baseless love, avas chinam. Person has to have avas chinam. And Rav Kook, when asked, once answered, if I have to make a mistake, I have to err in one direction or the other, I'd make a mistake in practicing too much avas chinam instead of sinas chinam any day of the week. To love, to exaggerate our love, to love beyond, to practice Avas Yisrael, to love all Jews. Again, you don't have to like all Jews. You'll say, how can I love all Jews? How can I love that person who voted for him or who I'd wanted to vote for her? How can I love that person who believes in this agenda, who believes in that value or this principle, who's behaving in that dangerous way? How can I love them? And the answer is, you don't have to like them, but you do have to love them because they're a member of your family. You have to be able to get along in the same room with them. You have to be able to attend the same simcha with them. You have to be able to sit at the Pesach Seder with them. You have to love them even if you don't like them. That's Avas Yisrael. We often hear a call for greater tolerance. The great Sri De'esh, Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, wrote an essay in the 1960s, I believe. He called Es Achai Anochi Mevakesh, which comes from the story of Yosef and his brothers. He said, my brothers, I request, my brothers, I'm longing for and looking for. And he writes in this essay, he says, you know, I love my fellow Jews and I want my fellow Jews to love me. He's talking about different denominations and different backgrounds. And he writes the following, Bein chiloni ledati, the difference, the relationship between those who are secular, who are not yet religious, and those who are dati, those who are religious. And he says, Anashim chiloniyim sovlanim lo yuchlu. He says, chiloni people, we can't be sovel to tolerate. The language he uses to describe is so powerful. He says, you know, people talk about we need tolerance. Organizations and think tanks and campaigns and efforts. It's the 9 days. We have to learn to tolerate one another more. Tolerate one another more? You know what you tolerate, says Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, the Sri De'esh. I'm paraphrasing. But you tolerate a bad rash. You tolerate slow Wi-Fi connection. You tolerate the side effects of a medicine you need to take. You tolerate the things you'd really rather not have that are miserable and difficult that you don't want. But you have to learn to live with them. That's what tolerance is. Says Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, can't we aspire to a higher standard in the relationship we have with fellow Jews? Not to tolerate one another, but to love one another. And he pledges and he promises, I'll love you, I want you to love me back. That doesn't mean we have to like one another. We don't have to approve of one another. We don't have to accept all the agenda and all the behaviors and all the actions and all the choices of one another. We don't have to like, but we do have to love. Chas v'shalom, God forbid we should ever describe another Jew, a fellow Jew, a brother, a sister, a member of our family as having a sense of tolerance for them. You want to get up off the floor. If we want to be able to end this gullus, this exile we find ourselves in, we have to end this divisiveness, this enmity, this hatred, this name-calling. We have to overcome our instinct and urge, like Brian Gabbett from a young age, to work on ourselves and to remember. Liking is an emotion, and emotions we can't always control, but loving is a decision. It is an action, it is a verb, and that we are responsible to, and we are responsible for how we speak about one another, how we speak about, and what we're willing to listen to spoken about one another. The name-calling and the rejection, the judgment and the marginalization. Rav Tzadok HaKohen of Lublin, I said it to my parsha shir this morning, in the Gimel de Puranusa, the three haftorahs that lead up to Tisha B'Av, he points out, if you want to know what got us in this mess and how to get out of it, you don't have to look any further than the three opening words, the words that open each of the three haftorahs of the Gimel de Puranusa. The first, 2 weeks ago, we read, Divrei Yirmiyahu. These are the words of Yirmiyahu, Divrei, Davar, Divrei Ela HaDvarim, we just began the fifth and final book of the Torah. Divrei, what are your words? What do you speak about? Are you careful? Are you not careful? You know, in our Parsha, Moshe Rabbeinu is recounting and recalling the seminal moments and events, the major milestones of Jewish history until that point. And of course, he includes among them when spies were sent to investigate the land. And he describes there, they were sent for what? To bring back Davar. Bring back Davar. What's bring back? Not Dever, the plague. Bring back Davar. Rashi says, our Parsha, Eladvarim. Rashi says, what does it mean, go bring back and retrieve Davar? Eze lashon heim medabrim. Go eavesdrop and listen. What language are they speaking? The spies went to investigate and to listen in. Not where their military installments were. Not what kind of equipment and weapons they had. Not what kind... No, go listen and eavesdrop. And the Maharal of Prague in his Guru Arya, his super commentary on Rashi, wonders, go listen in and eavesdrop what they're talking about. Who cares what they're talking about? Why does that matter? What matters is their military superiority, their military positioning, where are their vulnerabilities, can we successfully conquer the land? So the Maharal says an incredible insight. The Maharal says, if you want to know everything about someone, listen to what they talk about. And what they talk about says everything about who they are. Everything about who they are. I believe it was Eleanor Roosevelt who said, small people talk about people, average people talk about things, and great people talk about ideas. Go bring back Davar, go eavesdrop and tell us, what are we facing? Who are we confronting? Small people, average people, or great people? Yirmiyahu began the Gimel de Paranusa, the Haftorah we read 2 weeks ago with, Divrei Yirmiyahu. Divrei Yirmiyahu. Lo yachel dvaro, we read in Parshas Matos last week. Lo yachel dvaro, your dibur, what you speak about says everything about us. Are you small? Are you average? Or are you striving to be great? Do you talk about people? Do you talk about things? Or do you talk about ideas? Are you busy with the latest gossip? Did you hear this letter, this kashrus? Did you hear this new thing that came out? These people are fighting, these rabbis, these members, this shul did it this way, this one doesn't have the masks over there, this part. You talk about people? You talk about things? The latest car and the latest this, can you believe that we can't eat this and we can only eat that for the next 9 days? No fleshiks, no milchiks, what are we going to eat? What will be the menus? Let's review all the menus. We'll spend 9 days talking about menus. Are you small? You talk about people? Are you average? You talk about things? Or do you strive to be great? Do you talk about ideas, values, ideology, Torah? Do you talk about repairing the world in Hashem's image? The Pasuk says in Mishlei, Ish lafima halalo, a person according to the way they are praised. The simple understanding means if you want to get to know somebody, listen in when they're honored at the shul dinner, and you'll hear how they're spoken about, what everyone say about them. Listen when Rabbi Galar introduces them, and even though most of it won't be true, and it's good that their mother will hear it, they'll feel happy and proud, or the members of their shul who happen to dial in, hope they know better to actually believe it. But you'll hear how a person's praised and you'll know what to think about them. But Rabbeinu Yonah says, no, that's not what the Pasuk means. Ish lefi mahalalo means if you want to know about someone. Ish, you want to know who they are? You want to know what makes them tick? You want to know the measure of a person? Lefi mahalalo. What do they praise? What do they obsess over? What is their hobby? What do they talk about? What do they trade in? What do they care about? What are they invested in? What are they willing to sacrifice for? Ish lafi mahalalo. If you talk about that new model of car, the Tesla, if all you could talk about is the Tesla, on and on about the Tesla, nothing wrong with the Tesla. It's a wonderful car, I'm sure. Stock certainly would be wonderful to have bought even a little while ago. But is that all you talk about? The menu? Meat, dairy? Ish lafi mahalalo. What you talk about says everything about it. So it began with Yirmiyahu telling us, Dirvi Yirmiyahu. And last week the Haftorah was, Shimu Dvar Hashem. Yirmiyahu again told us, Shimu. It began with what we speak about, and then it moved over to Shimu. What do we listen to? What do we tolerate? And tolerate here, I mean, yeah, what do we tolerate? Do we tolerate talking during davening? Shimu. Do we tolerate people gossiping and slandering and talking Lashon Hara? What do we tolerate that people post on our social media spaces? What do we tolerate that people think we can be on their list to email, to text? What do we tolerate? Shimu, and what we accept and what we receive and what we listen to. In this coming Shabbos, we'll read the third of the Gimel de Paranusa, Chazon Yeshayahu ben Amotz. Chazon means what do we see? What do we look at? What do we spend our time looking at and watching and reading? What are the images and icons and ideas we allow into our home? It's the combination Divrei Shim'u Chazon that says everything about us. These are the three keys in the answer to how to behave, to learn to love even those we don't like by employing these three Divrei Shim'u and Chazon. Rabbi Levin was the Tzaddik of Yerushalayim. Don't worry, Rabbi Galler, I'm winding down. Rabbi Aryeh Levin was the tzaddik of, the beauty of Zoom is that people can leave. They don't want to be rude when they're in person to get up and walk out, but the beauty of Zoom. But don't worry, I'm winding down nonetheless. Rabbi Aryeh Levin was known as the tzaddik of Yerushalayim, a tzaddik in our time. Countless amazing stories about him. I want to tell you one of my favorite. He was incredibly pious and he was kind. He was a great Talmud Chacham and he was personally, of course, a person who was meticulous in his observance of Torah and mitzvos. He lived in a quaint, quiet area of Yerushalayim called Nachlaot. It's right behind Machane Yehuda, behind the Shuk. And there was a young man who grew up in his neighborhood in Nachlaot. If you know that little alleyways, it's has such a charm and such a charisma, that neighborhood. And the young man grew up in Nachlaot. Rav Aryeh Levin knew him well. And a little while after the young man had grown up, Rav Aryeh Levin couldn't help but feel that this young man was avoiding him. Rav Aryeh Levin would walk down the street, he'd catch a glimpse of the boy, and the boy would go down an alleyway. He was avoiding him. But one day he bumped into the young man. They bumped into each other. And the young man couldn't help it. Rav Aryeh Levin had found him. And he confronted him. And he asked him, I can't help but feel that you're avoiding me. Tell me, how are you? Where are you? I miss you. what's happening in your life? So the young man sheepishly replied. He said, it's true, I've been trying to avoid you. I'm embarrassed, I'm ashamed. I've begun to walk away from the observant way of life that you knew me to have grown up in. And Rav Aryeh Levin paused. And what do you think he did? Give him musa, rebuke him harshly. How could you? How dare you? You're going to burn, don't you know? Embarrassment to your family, to us, to Yerushalayim. Rav Aryeh Levin looked at him and he said, he took the young man's hand into his own. And he looked at him and he said, you know, I'm a very short man. I can only see what's in your heart. I can't see what's on your head. I can only see what's in your heart. I can't see what's on your head. My friends, no matter how tall or short you may be, no matter how high you stand and what you can see, we can all choose to be like Rav Aryeh Levin and to see only what's in people's heart and not what's on their head. To find the Tzelem Elokim in them, the redeemable part of them, the godliness that can connect us and that we have in common, that will inspire and motivate us, even if we don't like everything about them, to learn to love them nonetheless. You know, on Seder night, Tisha B'Av and the first Seder always fall on the same day of the week. And there are many illusions of the connection between Seder night and Tisha B'Av, as happy and joyous, and as much as we celebrate freedom and liberty on Pesach night, there are so many symbols and signals at the Seder that remind us that we're not fully free. And therefore we eat the egg, the sign of mourning, and we dip in the salt water, and the karpas, and the fact that it's the same day of the week always, Tisha B'Av and Seder night. All of these connections between the two, because yes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out, but Pesach is also remembering how we got there. And we got there with dipping, when the brothers dipped Yosef's coat in blood and pretended he had died, he was killed by an animal. And so we dipped the karpas in the salt water, karpas, ketones, pasim, to remember how we got there and how we get out. The Baba Vareba says, you know, you take the middle matzah, the one that we recite the Magid, the story of our Exodus, the one that we recall and recount how we got there and what it will take to get out. Our story can only be told, says the Baba Vareba, if we bring the two halves of that middle matzah to the table and we put it back together. That matzah is broken, and there's so many broken people, and there are broken communities, and there are broken values, and there are broken things in our lives. But you know, the story of our Exodus and our freedom, the story of our next chapter in our redemption will only be written when we bring the two halves back to the table, and it takes every single one of us. We say in the bracha of Aliyah Yerushalayim, our longing is to build a binyan olam, which simply translated binyan olam means an everlasting building, an edifice, the third Beis HaMikdash, which either will fall from the sky or we will rebuild, machlokas Rashi, Rambam. But a third edifice, which is a binyan olam, it's everlasting. But the Chafetz Chaim says that's not what it means. You know what it means to be a binyan olam? Not an everlasting building, but it's a binyan that takes the olam. This is a capital campaign that 100% participation is a must. But here's the good news. You don't have to take out your checkbook or your credit card. You don't have to Venmo. You don't have to send money. We can raise what will take the building blocks of the Beis HaMikdash. This capital campaign can happen even in an economic downturn of a pandemic. The binyan olam is that the entire olam, every member of Klal Yisrael has to make their donation, has to give their pledge, and our pledge is to love every Jew, even those that we don't like. Even those we don't like. And so as we approach the Shabbos Chazon, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak of Bardichev says, Shabbos Chazon means we have a vision of what the world could be. Imagine, said Rav Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev, imagine a world that we all got along. Imagine a world that we acted as a family. Imagine a world in which even those we don't like, we learn to love. Imagine a world we see what's in people's heart, now what's on their head. Imagine a world we make the decision to practice loyalty and dedication to one another. Chazon, this is a Shabbos of imagination, of vision, of being able to picture and see, and then please God to bring that into a reality. Thank you so much for joining. Thank you so much for hosting. And I'm happy to take any questions.
Rabbi Goldberg, thank you so, so much. As I said at the beginning, your passion and your, you have a certain way of value that really, when I listen to you, I really am moved to be a better person. It oozes out of you, the passion for what you do and what you teach. And we really appreciate you being here tonight. And such a kavod to have you here. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you.
If there are any questions, by all means, please feel free. I want to actually ask you one question that was on my mind, sure. And maybe even on behalf of the shul, if you wouldn't mind. Would that be okay?
Sure.
Just one thought, one question. If you had to give, I know this is a high pressure question, but because I really respect and look up to you so much in so many ways, I'm going to ask you for your insight. If you had to give one piece of advice for those who are still going through a challenging time because of COVID and all of the restrictions and the tensions and whatnot, to continue to maintain a sense of inspiration, a sense of strength through this time, if you had to sum it up in a thought, what would you tell somebody?
In a thought, who has anyone have 3 more hours to be together? The question was.
I'm all in. I'm invested. I'm all in.
I can't thank you enough, Rabbi Galla, for your kind words. First of all, for your friendship, thank you so much. The question was that all of us are struggling. I think the first thing we have to do is validate that struggle. Anyone who's walking around on cloud nine, and even the people who talk about, yeah, I'm quarantining, I'm locked down with my family, it doesn't get better than this, life is amazing, you know. We should validate. If not all the moments, there are many moments, there are some moments, there are times that all of us are feeling frustrated and fearful, that all of us are uncertain and afraid. And how could you not be? How could you not be? It's a complicated time. It's a really complicated and scary time. There's so many sick people that we're still davening for. There's a member of my family who was admitted to the hospital in Israel today, who's younger than I, my sister-in-law, who we daven for. And Rachel Bas Yehudis, please God, she'll have a refuah shleima. She has a corona, and she needed some monitoring. Please God, she is okay and will be okay. But anyone who thinks that this is past or beyond us, and I say that not to make anyone scared, but a little bit to make you scared, and for all of us to behave a little bit better, is simply a fool and is making a mistake. So now that I've depressed you, how do I answer the question of how to give people a little bit of chizuk? I'll give you a couple of very quick things, and I'm just telling you what I work on. One is to be in the moment. The moment we start to project forward is when we get lost. What will be tomorrow, next week, next month, next year? When will there be a vaccine? When will life go back to normal? When will I run out of money? When will the government run out of its stimulus money to take care? When and what and how? Now, I'm not suggesting it doesn't mean you have to plan for the future. We were today writing the survey like everyone else are going to send out, as if 2 months in advance without knowing what will be can somehow try to plan for the Yom Ha'Ra'im. But that's the responsible thing to do, so we're going to try to plan for the Yom Ha'Ra'im. You have to plan for the future. I'm not suggesting that you freeze in time and don't pay attention. What I'm suggesting is each day do what you have to do to get to the end of that day. And if that day's job is to plan for the future of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, then you have to do that. My daughter's wedding is 2 weeks from today. And we're still figuring out invitations and lists and quotas and who can make it and where Sheva Brachas should be here in Florida. I'm just telling you very personally, because I want to give by example that we're still figuring things out. So number one is to live in the moment, to be in the present. That doesn't mean not to plan for the future, and it doesn't mean not to think about and be informed and inspired by the past, but it means not to sacrifice, and here this is our usual topic on Tuesday nights, so we covered it a little bit, but it means not to forfeit the present, because that's the only dimension that matters, the only dimension we have. While I wish and you wish we had crystal ball and we could see what will be next week, what will be next year, when will the vaccine come, when will we return to normal, none of us, nobody that I know, has that crystal ball yet. So don't forfeit the present, live in the moment. The second, which I think is even more important, is to work on emunah and bitachon. You know, it's not just Hasidim and Neo-Hasidim, and it's not just the spiritual. Even we in our community that likes to use big fancy terms like axiological and ontological and sound like we're academics and scholars, and if you're briskers and you want to understand Lamdas, we could all work on our Emunah and Bitachon and feel and see the presence of Hashem. Ein od milvado. The Nefesh HaChaim Reb Chaim V'Lajner says that when you feel stuck, and that when you feel that the world is caving in, simply recite and meditate and reflect on those words. Ein od milvado. There is nothing but Him. It is all Him. It is all Him. It's all Him. It's all Him. You know, we, again, just to be personal for a moment, we tested in Florida, and we came to our undisclosed quarantining location here, and we tested here. And one member of our family got a second test today, because even though we tested literally 2 days ago, the question wanted to make sure they were. So I was driving them there, literally a couple hours ago, hoping I'd make it back for this year. And I said on the way there, I said, you know what the good news is? Whichever way it turns out is good news. Take a deep breath with me and realize that if it's negative, that's clear and black and white, and we understand how it's good news. But even if the test is positive, clearly, ein od milvado, that's from Hashem, that's also good news. So when is it that you panic, and when is it that you stress, and when is it that you feel burdened? When there can be bad news. But if by definition the news is good, and I don't mean to take this to the extreme, chas v'shalom, people who've suffered loss, and I had a first cousin passed away of corona, I understand that there was irreversible loss, that it's very hard. One, I would never be flippant or presumptuous to say, you know, oh, it's all good news. Eino ad mavado, it's all from Hashem. But I'm talking about even in the moment that you're getting tested and it could impact the way that you're going to have a simcha in a couple of weeks, that even when you travel there and you're in that car ride, you're singing Eino ad mavado and you're saying, either way, it's good news. Whichever way it turns out, it's what's meant to be. Eino ad mavado. This is what's right. This is what's meant to be. And therefore, this is good news. I have nothing to worry about. So you thought you were asking me a short question, but it's a long-winded answer. And the two things I think work in tandem and in combination. Be in the present. Be in the present. Remember the past. Learn from the past. Be informed and inspired by the past. Plan for the future. We have to plan for the future. You can't be irresponsible. But don't do either at the expense of or forfeiting the present. Be in the present. What do I have to get done today? How do I get to the end of today? How do I get to the end of today? You know, again, in my own personal life and in this journey, and I would take this problem any day of the week of planning a simcha on my Emunah Shiur tomorrow morning, I'll tell the story about the flat tire we got in North Carolina and how I wasn't sure we were going to make it or where we were going to be for Shabbos, right? So you take two steps forward, you take a step back, two steps forward, a step back, each part of the way. So you can panic and you can actually do more damage to yourself than Corona could, or you could learn to let go and let God. And Emunah Bitachon, to lean in and to feel a sense of Einod Melvado, it's up to Hashem. So what do I have to get done today? Let's say that would have happened, I would have gotten stuck in North Carolina. Okay, what do I have to do? How do I get towed? How do I get a hotel for my family? What does it mean for Shabbos? What does it mean for when we get there? What does it mean for a quarantine? What do I have to get done to get through today? Not projecting, not looking, not for the future. What do I have to get done for today? That's it. That's it. We have to let go and let Hashem do His work. The combination of being in the moment and Einod Melvado. Einod Mavado. I had an Emunah Shiur a couple years ago focused on this Nefesh HaChaim and a story of the Brisker Rav and Einod Mavado. My wife got a beautiful piece of art that now adorns our home, and we actually have little cards that sit on our Shabbos table. Einod Mavado. If I could, I'd plaster it everywhere. On the bathroom mirror, on the car dashboard, on my cell phone, on my laptop. I'd plaster it everywhere. Einod Mavado. Stop. Take a deep breath. What happens when you take that deep breath? The word neshama and neshima come from the same word. HaKadosh Baruch Hu breathed life into us, and when we take deep breaths, deeper breaths, then we rejuvenate and reinvent and we re-nourish that sense of God in us, that calm, that peace, that belief, that faith, that hope, that optimism, that ability. So that's what I think we could all be working on. That's what I'm working on. And for the most part, it's working for me. I feel happy and calm. And I hope that we all can, and we will come out of this even better than we went into it.
Thank you. Beautiful answer. And thank you for the Divrei Chizuk.